Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And of course, we ordinarily do not talk about other people on our program. We like to talk about ideas, but tonight I really feel that there is a personality out there that has been leading the conservative Christian movement for many years, and I think that, of course, we have to talk about him because he's going to take a lot of people in. He's going to take a lot of parents who have children in school, of course, he is going, of course, to do terrible, terrible damage with a very profitable business gimmick that he has aimed at exploiting Christians across America. Now, I first encountered this gentleman many, many years ago. It was in the mid-1980s when this lifelong Democrat was appointed the Secretary of Education by Ronald Reagan. And, of course, you wonder why President Reagan would appoint a lifelong Democrat the head of the Department of Education. And I heard him on so many of the Christian programs here in America talking about how his goal was to close down the Department of Education. Well, of course, he could say what he wanted to, but of course, he went right along with his whole idea of ever-increasing government control over the educational process. So he said one thing, and then he did another, and then, of course, he headed the war on drugs, the drug czar, and then of course, he was always in the background, always the speaker at the conservative. I remember hearing him at Pat Robertson's Christian Crusade meetings, and he really pandered to the audience. He had all these conservative Christians just so taken in by his rhetoric, which sounded so great and wonderful and Christian and virtuous. And then, of course, I never forget, it was sometime in the early 1990s, I attended a medical meeting in Texas, and there were all sorts of doctors there, and William Bennett was the featured speaker. And, of course, he had those doctors laughing and chortling, but I'd been watching him for many, many years, and I knew that he said one thing, but he was always on the really important issues, was on the wrong side. So, I'm that sort of person that you hate to see in the audience. And I, of course, waited until the questions and answers came along, and then I got up and I said, "Well, Mr. Bennett, I know how dedicated you are to the concepts of freedom and democracy and personal rights and liberty," and he's up there grinning like a Cheshire cat. And I said, "How do you feel about President George Herbert Walker Bush's position on most favored nation treaty status, the brutal communist regime in China that is oppressing the people and killing and persecuting the Christians? What's your position on support for that government?" Well, of course, if I'd hit him with a bucket of ice water, why, it couldn't have had more of an impact. Because that was a question he didn't want to answer. And finally, he had to say, "Well, I support the president. He knows what he's doing, and I have no question he knows what he's doing, but is that really what a Christian president or what a so-called Christian leader would do, is support the brutal communist dictators in communist China?" Well, with us this evening is Sarah Leslie. And then Sarah is another watcher. She's been watching William Bennett for a long time. And, of course, she brought to my attention something that he is up to. Of course, we all heard the recent scandal of this man of virtues, this man who wrote the Book of Virtues, is an addicted gambler. He lost $8 million at the gambling tables in Atlantic City and apparently in Las Vegas here in the last year or so. Now, that's a lot of money he could do a lot of good with. And as he said, "Well, I wasn't spending anybody else's money. It was my money." But question, where does he get all of that money? He doesn't have a regular job. Sarah, tell us about William Bennett and, of course, why, you know, we would break our rule and want to talk about a personality rather than an idea, because what is he doing that is endangering children across America?
Well,
Now, first of all, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners who don't know you? You're the woman who publishes Charlotte Isabey's book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of Americans. Sarah's been on the front lines of this battle for a long time. Just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
I'm from Iowa. I'm living in the state of Ohio now. I'm a homeschool mom, a parent, and I'm also the publisher of Charlotte's book. For a number of years, my husband and I published the Christian Conscience magazine, and before that, the Free World Research Report, and we've been following education reform issues now for about 2 decades, and of course the career of William Bennett as well. And this really is not about the man as much as it is about the ideas that he's promoting and the agenda that he's pushing. And
he does have an agenda, and that's what's so important.
Well, he's been a key individual during his entire career to push this particular agenda. And it's now manifesting itself as a really direct threat to homeschooling across the country. And most homeschoolers are probably unaware of this threat. It's more obvious in some states than in other states. It depends on your state's charter school law. But essentially what Bill Bennett did a few years ago is he set up a curriculum company called K-12 Inc., which sounded like Mr. Virtue was setting up a virtuous curriculum, a character education, classic traditional kind of education, and he began marketing it to the homeschool community. And everything appeared as though it was just simply a curriculum, although if you went to buy the curriculum, you would find out that you were actually enrolling in his school, a distance learning or a cyber school. However, what he did is he made a big switcheroo. He set up what are called charter schools. And his K-12 Inc. is coming in many, many states across the country, either through state laws and or federal laws, all sorts of waivers, all sorts of inside connections. And he's setting up charter schools with his K-12 curriculum so that when homeschoolers sign in and sign on to his company and enroll their children, they actually become public school students again. They are actually on the public rolls again. And a lot of this is being done through very sophisticated direct mailing techniques and very sophisticated marketing techniques. And this is something homeschoolers need to be aware of.
All right, fine. And so he knows how to find the list because they're rather hard to get the list of homeschoolers. The organizations usually sort of guard those to keep this sort of thing from happening. But of course, he got the list, and then he spent a great deal of money in targeting these homeschooling parents. But in the process, of course, what he's doing is taking these children back into a system that, of course, where the state will determine what they're going to be educated, because he certainly has let out a curriculum, and I hope it doesn't include some of the things that he's involved in personally.
You mean the gambling?
Right. Well, of course, the thing is that you have to understand he is complete establishment. Of course, the whole thrust of the establishment, you know, talking about virtues, talking about Christianity, talking about these things, but the whole real thrust is to change the attitude of the children, of their attitudes, beliefs, and values. And, of course, if you've read some of the literature he has, you know, he talks about democracy, even talks about the 10th of the Federalist Papers, but he completely leaves out the part in the 10th Federalist Paper that says, you know, Madison had said, you know, democracies are rare spectacles of turbulence and contention are incompatible with the rights of private property and personal liberty, and are usually short in their lives as they are in their deaths. And he does everything in his books to convince us, our children, that we are a democracy. And he knows very well we're a republic. That's why he deletes that part. So he has an agenda, but of course he has the confidence of the Christian conservatives of America, both Catholic and Protestant. And I fear that, like the Pied Piper of Hamlet, he's leading the children to their destruction.
Well, that's unfortunately very true. His very sophisticated direct mail tactics, as nearly as we can tell from talking to homeschoolers around the country, have been extremely intrusive. He's been able to isolate and identify homeschoolers who normally wouldn't be identified or known about. We believe he's probably bought lists from public school districts or from the state, possibly from curriculum companies, in fact, most likely from curriculum companies, but also possibly Christian ministry mailing lists. And he's had a very sophisticated operation in which he was able to merge and purge these lists using possibly voter registration data or other civic information that would identify people's legal names that they never used for any other activity other than registering to vote, for example, or conducting, you know, filing their income taxes or something. So he's very sophisticated, and he's very aggressive. Homeschoolers in the state of Ohio, for example, have received dozens upon dozens of solicitations for them to join with his K-12 charter school program. And he set up meetings all over the state. When he was disinvited to the TO homeschool convention in the state of Ohio, he went to a motel across the street and set up his own operation and began recruiting homeschoolers to sign on. So this is very aggressive.
But now, of course, this is very, very profitable as well, isn't it? Yes. Because, of course, they're a charter school. He would get, what, $4,000 or $5,000 a year for their education, and then of course, he would pocket whatever it cost, whatever the difference between the cost to him for this mass-marketed charter school system, and, of course, what the state pays him. The government is paying him a lot of money to do that.
Well, yes, what happens is when you sign up with K-12, you actually are enrolling then in the public school system. But through the various state charter school laws, you are in the public school by way of the charter school. Now, in some states, all or a significant portion of their per pupil allotment goes straight to Bill Bennett. Then it goes out of the public school district coffers and straight into his pockets. And, of course, we unfortunately now know where some of that money ended up.
Well, somebody's got to support, you know, the gambling houses in Atlantic City and Las Vegas.
Yeah, and the educators have noticed that. What happened is when he submitted his proposal for the state of Ohio, he said $1,200, $1,500 per student is all his cost. He says when you sign up, you get a free computer. It's not technically free, and he has had to play with the language a little bit since his first solicitations because homeschoolers were a little irate that Mr. Virtues was using a deceptive marketing technique.
No, what do you mean by deceptive marketing technique?
Well, he said if you sign up, you get a you receive a computer. Well, it's not a free computer. It's a loaner. You have to return it, and there's only one per family. So if his expenses are $1,200 to $1,500 per student max,
per year.
Then that's about a $3,500 profit if your district is giving him $5,000.
Well, now, who then is going to determine what the curriculum will be?
Well, he has bragged that his curriculum is aligned to state and federal standards. Now, if you're a homeschooler who fled the public system because you didn't like outcome-based education, you didn't like touchy-feely stuff, you didn't like the new standards, you didn't like the new way of teaching, Bill Bennett brags in his reports that his curriculum is aligned and his kids will actually pass the test, the state assessment test. These are the proficiency tests, the OBE outcome-based tests. And so his curriculum is completely in line and in harmony with all of the worst of education reform.
And I think that the average person, the homeschooler, thinks, gee, we're going to be able to homeschool. It's not going to cost us anything, you know.
Yeah.
Isn't it wonderful? We're going to get a free computer, and our child's going to learn to use the computer, and they can stay at home, and they're not going to have all the bad influences that are in the school. But what's in the curriculum? And, of course, they are teaching to the state and federal tests. Those tests are aimed not at teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic, although the child may have a better chance of getting it at home if he has an opportunity to take phonics. But they are aimed at changing attitudes, values, and beliefs. That's what it's all about. And, orienting the children towards internationalism, undermining their faith in God, but very subtly. They're not going to come out too flagrantly and do that. But, you know, if the child really ends up going through school and they still believe in God and they still believe in country and they still believe in family by the time they're ready to graduate, why, the schools have failed.
That's right. One of the things that the mothers who signed on with the K-12 have mentioned on the discussion loops that they have amongst themselves on the internet is that they were shocked to realize that what they've actually signed on to is an internet education program for their child. They log on in the morning, they download the curriculum for the day, and that child spends up to 5 hours a day on the computer doing their schoolwork. And of course, all that time is recorded and all of the schoolwork is recorded. And there's not any flexibility. If little Billy cannot understand math the way it's being taught with K-12, the mom has to teach him that concept on her own time in her own way, but it doesn't count with the Bill Bennett plan.
But of course,
it's a very programmed instruction.
But of course, you know, the greatest education a child can get, other than the standards, reading, writing, and arithmetic, and then more advanced matters of math, you know, is in reading good books. And certainly, but of course, they're going to spend 5 hours a day on the computer. I don't think children ought to be on the computer. I think they ought to be, the lesson plans laid out, and certainly they can be self-taught. They need good textbooks to do that, but then in the time that they're not putting in on their school studies, they need to be reading those great novels of the past, Alexander Dumas and certainly Charles Dickens and so many of those novels that I grew up where there were real heroes and villains and where there is a religious connotation, a religious story, and morality, and there were good guys and there were bad guys, and not this world of equivocation we live in today that we see on television.
Yes, actually, one of the strengths of traditional homeschooling, private homeschooling, not the public kind of homeschooling that Bill Bennett's got going now, but one of the strengths of private homeschooling was always its wonderful flexibility that parents had. If a certain method or a certain curriculum wasn't working with their child, they could go find something else. They could go try a new method, go try a new way of learning. If the child can't learn 2 plus 2 equals 4 one way, try teaching them another way. The flexibility, and the flexibility in terms of time and structure and method and all of that. When you hook a kid up to a computer, then you're into a very programmed instruction mode. And of course, B.F. Skinner, this was his dream come true, is to have programmed instruction where children immediately got rewards and punishments and feedback from, plugging things into the computer.
That's the old method of dog training. Of course, B.F. Skinner was one of these intellectuals who wanted, of course, to take over control of the minds of the children to use it to reshape society. And he was a wicked, wicked, wicked man. He was around, the middle of the last century?
Yes. That's right. He was not religious in any sense of the word. He was an avowed humanist who did not believe in God. In fact, the late Dr. Francis Schaeffer wrote about B.F. Skinner and the threat he would pose to humans on the face of this earth in the years to come if Skinner's ideas ever became prevalent, because they so dehumanized men, and we're certainly seeing a lot of that come about. A lot of Skinner's original ideas that were put forth during the 1960s, which were very utopian sounding but actually totalitarian in practice, are now being implemented through No Child Left Behind, direct instruction methods, that kind of thing.
All right, fine. In fact, for our listeners out there who don't know what No Child Left Behind is, or they don't understand the new federal educational program that has been instituted, it was really the Kennedy bill, but of course it was pushed through by the Bush administration, the most radical takeover of education in American history. We put together a wonderful 4-tape set. It's called Fed Ed. That's Fed Ed, and we recommend that you get it. We also carry the book Fed Ed by Alan Quist, who's analyzed this program, gone through all the textbooks, and he himself is a professor teaching up in Minnesota. And, of course, you'll be fascinated to realize what's happened and perhaps very saddened to realize that those of us who, of course, wanted to believe that if we had the Republicans in the White House, things would be different than when we had Bill Clinton in the White House. So disappointed to find out that, of course, the program that has been instituted now is far more radical than anything Bill Clinton advocated. So you need to get the facts in the book Fed Ed, which we have, the 4-tape set on Fed Ed also. And we'll give you real insight into how this works. And, of course, Now, has anybody actually sat down and analyzed this program? Have any of the parents actually who have access to it already have been studying what they're going over, what their children is learning on this standardized program that's being used all across America?
I've seen the actual proposal that Mr. Bennett put forth to the state of Ohio, and it lists what the curriculum is. And here's a standard technique that this man uses. And, of course, I've read a great amount of his writings over the last 20 years since he's been in prominent public office. He will mix the good and the bad so that you hear or you read what you want to. You will hear the virtues. You will hear the character. You'll hear the morality. You'll hear the good stuff. But he also weaves into everything else the bad stuff. And you have to read everything with a fine-tooth comb and start pulling out all the bad stuff, because you will find that that man has, in his proposals for his curriculum and instruction, all of the plan for education reform: rewards and penalties, accountability, results-driven, all the touchy-feely stuff, and it's all couched in words that sound very worthy and nice, like we need our children to have good citizenship skills and good character and wonderful, you know, virtue. However, there's a real dark side to it. Back when he was heading up the Department of Education in the Reagan administration, he actually wrote the model curriculum for a national curriculum in high school called the James Madison High School. And
who can be against James Madison? My goodness, a great president.
Well, sure. And the James Madison High School proposal sounded absolutely, you know, hardcore academics and solid, you know, really strong content. However, when you read the fine print, what he was actually advocating was a national curriculum that was very focused on having a consistent, across-the-board, same education for every student in America, regardless of cultural background or any differences in society or whatever, or human makeup, and common values. One of the things that becomes very apparent after studying Bennett, especially some of the things that he came public with in the mid-90s, is the man is a communitarian. And what basically that word means is it's a new kind of communist.
In fact, if you look in the dictionary, why the word communitarian and communist are the same. Now, what do you mean he's a communitarian? What is he really advocating? How is he going to change the child's attitude towards society? Is he going to do away with individualism and have the child mold into become simply another cog in this whole machinery of society?
Yes. The child is trained to become just a part of the community. That individualism, independence, freedom of thought, all of the things that we know now gave rise to America as we knew it and its strength. Communitarianism believes that the state is God, essentially, that man is not worth anything. Man has no value unless he's part of the community, and they define the community with a capital C, meaning state. And this is a widespread belief among the neocons, or the neoconservatives.
I mean, those people have taken over the current administration.
That's right.
From the Project for the New American Century, right?
Right. They track their ideas back to ancient Greece and to Kierkegaard and a lot of the German philosophers of the 1800s and some of key philosophers during the 20th century. And they all hold to a particular worldview that, on the surface, sounds very conservative and even somewhat religious, but when you start digging into it, what it really is an aberrant form of communism. It's in which the state really runs all of the private sector, all of your life that you would put under your own private control, like schooling your kids, where you go to church, that kind of thing. Your charitable work.
Well, of course, a lot of the neocons were really Marxists, and they really realized it didn't work, so they wanted to come up with another alternative. And, of course, it's still totally statist. In other words, the state will regulate everything. You just will not have the totalitarianism of the wicked communists. You will have your own form of totalitarian under a ruling elite. And, of course, guess who's going to be the ruling elite?
Yeah. Well, one of the mechanisms for this to occur, for them to achieve their utopia on Earth, is the assessment test. They believe that each human being on the planet possesses human capital, or as Peter Drucker, the management guru, calls it, knowledge capital.
Because that's the same Peter Drucker who's organizing the churches, of course, in this whole idea of the church growth movement.
Yes, actually, Peter Drucker is being financed by the Rockefeller Foundation, I believe, and set up something called the Leadership Institute back in the early 80s, which financed Pastor Rick Warren, who's written The Purpose-Driven Church, which is really introducing outcome-based education to the church, results-driven, purpose-driven, you see what I'm saying?
Right, of course.
And that's a whole other story in and of itself, but essentially Peter Drucker came up with the idea of a three-legged stool. He said there were three facets to society. There was the corporation, which he spent the first part of his life working on, you know, General Motors and that kind of thing, the management consulting thing. And then he also has the second leg of the stool, which is the state, with a capital S, and of course he worked on PPBS, which is the introducing the same system into the government. And then the third part of his life, he's focused on the private sector, which you would call churches, charities, schools, and homes. And when you study what he writes, essentially all of these sectors need to come under one umbrella, and that's the state. There's really only one leg to his stool, and that's the state. But he believes each person on the planet possesses something called knowledge capital, and that they should be assessed yearly or periodically on their knowledge capital, and every year they should have value added, which is a term you'll see very frequently in education reform, that you have to have a value added assessment, which means you add to your value, your knowledge capital, human worth, every year. Well, of course, I have many friends who have children who are never going to increase their human worth. In fact, every year they will lose human worth because they're special children. And how they will ever do on these assessments and what society under this new totalitarian utopia will treat them, I don't know. But that's this vision that these men have, and they share it in common. Of course, right now they're working on the churches.
Well, I might mention, of course, that, we've talked to our listeners before about the Project the New American Century, this group of 25 men who back in 1997 decided they were going to take over the government. They were going to reorient our thrust of our foreign policy. We were going to create a new international order for our profit and for our principles, whatever they may be. And, of course, you can find this, of course, in their statement of principles at their website, newamericancentury.org. That's newamericancentury.org. And, of course, it gets their statement of principles, June of 1997. And then, of course, you'll find out who these people are. And, of course, there's Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, John Bolton, Frank Gaffney, William J. Bennett. So he is part of this neocon movement, this elitist movement. But of course, what's really so interesting, you'll see these people, for instance, James Woolsey, former director of the CIA, is part of this. 11 of the original 25 people came from the Council on Foreign Relations. This is a CFR front organization, but you'll see, of course, James Woolsey will make a statement, and then they'll call upon Frank Gaffney to comment on it, or they'll call on Gary Bauer to comment it. He's also part of this movement. And of course, he's telling you how great Gaffney is, and Gaffney tells you how great Bennett is, and Bennett tells you how great Donald Rumsfeld is. And well, this is how, of course, they run things behind the scenes, because unless you listen to a program like this, you don't know who the actors are without a program. Well, they have a website, newamericancentury.org. You'll find that they're a racist. Look at their publication, Rebuilding America's Defenses, and they talk about, of course, these wonderful new medicine weapons are going to come up that will not only transform biological warfare, but it couldn't be used to transform society. If you want the exact quotations, you can go to my June newsletter. That's the June Radio Liberty newsletter at www.radioliberty.com, or give us a call and we'll tell you how to get one. We'll be glad to offer one to you. Thank you. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening, Sarah Leslie, and we're talking about, of course, William J. Bennett and his program, of course, bringing virtues into education. This is William J. Bennett, who lost $8 million at the gambling tables recently. Of course, a little embarrassing when it's all brought out, and of course, the liberals, media who brought that out, of course, will do anything, of course, to defame Christianity. But of course, is this really Christianity, or are there people who use Christianity to push a different agenda? And this is the elitist agenda that Sarah is talking about. There really are people who want to redesign society the way they think it should be, to do away with individualism, to do away with freedom. And of course, you get children very early. You'll see how we've just got to get children into school, you know, at the when they're 3 years old. Why? Well, because if they stay at home with their parents, they're going to develop these ideas of God and family and country. And we don't want these children to be sick when they enter the educational system. We want them to be healthy. We want to have already destroyed their belief in God and family and country. And they really feel this way. They feel that they have the right to lead, and we, of course, should follow. They do not believe in the concepts of America, of individualism. They believe in collectivism, which is the... Well, that's really the second oldest religion. Somebody said, you know, this is the second oldest religion. It was first whispered beneath the branches of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil during the days of creation by the serpent, who said, ye shall be as gods. And that's what it's all about. They're to be the gods, and we're to be, of course, their subjects. So why don't you pick it up from there, Sarah? And if you're out there in the listening audience, you agree, you disagree, give us a call. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Go ahead, Sarah.
Okay. Well, a number of homeschoolers around the country have been getting quite alarmed at what's happening. There's a whole move that's going along with what Bill Bennett is doing. Basically, he's creating a homeschool clone, a homeschool look-alike. It's not the real thing, but it certainly looks like it because it's moms who are schooling their children at home, but technically and legally, it's public schooling. And there's a number of the traditional homeschoolers around the country who do not want a dime of state intrusion or state money or state oversight, meanings that they don't want to become public schoolers. They set up a website called WeStandForHomeschooling.org. And at the website, WeStandForHomeschooling.org, you can go and read what the problem is and a couple of examples what the problem is and sign a statement if you agree that, yes, this is a problem. It may not be in your state yet, but it will be coming soon. I know for sure it's already going on in California. There's also another website called HomeschoolFreedom.org, which gives a lot of the background information and material about the entire issue. But charter schools and these cyber charters are a threat to homeschooling because the media, for one, is calling them homeschooling, and those people who are marketing them, the Bill Bennett's and others, are calling them homeschooling. And in fact, a lot of the homeschoolers who sign up with them are saying this is homeschooling. There's a number of school districts around the country who have signed on to this whole cyber charter concept where the child is hooked to the school district through a computer at home. And they're calling this blended schools. And what this is it's a hybrid of homeschooling and public schooling. It's technically and legally homeschooling, but it looks like homeschooling. Now, the first person that I ever saw propose this idea was, of all people, William Spady, who's the father of outcome-based education. Many of your listeners may remember William Spady. He was all over the country during the 90s promoting this outcome-based education. And he submitted a proposal to the New American School Development Corporation for a design team called the New West Design Team. And this New West proposal had a diagram. And at the time, we looked at that and were quite alarmed because he showed homeschoolers being hooked to the public system by way of a computer. And, of course, once you're hooked by the computer, then you're in the assessment test, you're in the data bank, you're going to be monitored, you're going to be followed, you'll have to jump through all the hoops, dot every I, cross every T, get your kids immunized if you don't already, and pass the proficiency test.
But, of course, it's free, isn't it?
Well, I don't know that taxpayers would call this free.
Well, I know, of course. It is. But you see, the trouble is what they'll do is appeal to the families that, you know, they may be putting out a $1,500 a year for their homeschooling texts and all of these things. And
yes.
But here's an opportunity to get it for free. And, you know, there's something just sounds so great. You watch on television. They say, we've got all these videos, all these CDs here. We just want to give them to you for nothing. Or, you know, you feel so great when a person calls and says, congratulations, you've won the prize, you know.
Yeah.
Because you try to find out what the prize is, and it's pretty hard to, they're a little vague about that, but you've won several prizes, you know. And, of course, it could be a car, it could be a television set, or it could be a and, of course, you always end up with that you know, that's the one, of course, you got to give them a little bit of money ahead of time to pay the income tax on, so you won't be stuck with a big income tax. So, but these are gimmicks that they use, and they know exactly how to play people. But, of course, what you're really doing is playing with the future of our children.
That's for sure. And you're also playing with your freedoms, because you're giving up considerable freedom once you sign on to one of these charter schools. You're giving up not only your freedoms, but you're endangering the freedoms of other homeschoolers around the country.
And you're also endangering your own children when you do that. Of course, but of course, what we have is we have this picture of the man of virtues, a Christian leader touted by so many of our Christian ministries, the finest Christian ministries, because this man says exactly what we want to believe. But the question is, does he really believe what he says?
Well, he writes and speaks out of both sides of his mouth. If you read his writings, you'll find that he's full of double speech. He'll say something, and in the same breath, even in the same sentence, in the same paragraph, say exactly the opposite. And it's very important to read what he's written, especially through the lens of education reform.
Right. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling us from Santa Cruz here. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I think if people aren't familiar with the term wolves in sheep clothing, they better get familiar with it quick.
All right.
I've been tracking with Mr. Bennett for quite a while, and I'm really happy you're doing this show this evening.
Well, I usually don't like to get into personalities, but I just feel that this is so vitally important, because I've seen him just twist the audiences around, and the man of the people, the man of virtues, and then, of course, I know where he's really coming from.
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of guts on both your parts to do this, but I think you're doing it very well, and you're putting nothing on the air that can be disputed.
All right, thank you.
And as long as you are able to maintain that, you're safe.
Well, of course, people only have to go to the newamericancentury.org website and see who these people are who've taken over our government, and get the names of the 25 people involved, and there's William J. Bennett.
Yeah. I'm going to propose something that may be a little far out, but then a lot of things are pretty far out these days. I think we're finding out more and more that truth is often stranger than fiction. Sarah, is that the right name? Sarah?
Yes. Sarah Leslie, right.
Sarah Leslie, yeah. Welcome to the air. You used a couple terms 5 or 10 minutes ago. Value added and human worth, and I just had to start thinking about that. Not too many years ago, in a previous presidential administration, we heard this term, value added, very often, in relation to a tax that was going to be imposed. And then your other phrase, human worth, I just had to start wondering, would people be taxed on their human worth? Now, that sounds a little far out, but...
Well, I think really what they're talking about, Mike, is this idea of people are capital, the human capital.
Mm-hmm.
There's
right.
something, of course, that belongs to the state, can be spent, and can be utilized to advance the common good.
Right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, there's an appendix in Charlotte Isserbeet's book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, written by a woman named Cynthia Weatherly, called When Is Assessment Really Assessment? And back in the 90s, she began figuring out that when they used the word assessment and testing, that that's exactly what they were talking about, is human capital in monetary terms, in taxing terms. If you start reading the writings of Peter Drucker, the management guru, and he's a major player behind the scenes in a lot of education reform, most people don't realize that, you will find that he is actually proposing to assign every human being on the planet with a voucher, which would be equivalent to what you're talking about, that you would be assigned a human worth, and that you would be assessed every year, and that assessed has full economic meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, and the value added is definitely applied to human beings. Now, that's incredible. I came into education reform by way of the Right to Life movement. And I can tell you that that just puts all my red flags out big time, because once we start talking about human worth, what are we going to do with those people who don't have human worth by the state's definition?
Well, many of us are already familiar with this sort of concept. They call it human resources in corporate America.
Yeah.
And as I've said on the air before, we don't live under democracy or a constitutional republic. We live under fascism, and people had better wake up and look at it. And so it's only natural that we would have a concept such as human worth coming through governmental agencies, which are really anymore only tools of corporate America. And I'm not demeaning all of the corporations in America. Many of them are just legitimate, honest, private businesses. But we have a certain few at the top that are very large in the Fortune 500, et cetera. And I'm not even saying all of the Fortune 500. But these philosophies and concepts and views of humanity are extending down from the power elite. Now, I had to think through what would be the thinking behind a taxation on human worth. What we have through this education system is the state's investment in the individual, and so the individual becomes worth anything at all based on what the state has invested in them, never mind that the taxes paid for the system that made them have already been paid for. The tax money came from us.
Yes, but you see, but it really belongs to the state. Hey, we're going to run, Mike. But I think it's a point well made. Thank you, sir.
I go 1 minute further? The Nazi system identified essential workers and useless eaters.
Right.
I think we'll be broken down the same way, and they did it by way of useful idiots like Bill Bennett.
Okay, thanks so much. Okay. Any comments at all on what Mike was saying there, Sarah?
Yeah, I'd like to say to Mike, if you go out on the Internet and do a search on Peter Drucker, I believe the name of the paper that he wrote back in 1994 is called The Age of Social Transformation, in which he makes a very exact point that Mike was saying. It's just written there black and white so Mike can have it and prove to people that he's not a kook, that this man has actually written this and proposed it. It's just phenomenal.
And I really think that people have to understand, other Christians, and many Christians are listening to this program, Peter Drucker is the man who is really driving the church growth Christian movement today.
Yes.
And, of course, driving the churches away from the message of God to a successful business, and, of course, Christianity is being packaged like a cake of soap to providing, of course, what the people want, but, of course, certainly never telling anybody that they're sinners saved by grace. Okay, go ahead, Sarah, because I think that's really so fascinating and so important that people understand that this has reached right down into the homeschool system that's being sold in the name of, oh, here's a free homeschooling program.
And well, it will also affect the private Christian schools, and this is a big important point. Even though the homeschoolers are the one who have stepped up to bat right now and are taking a stand around the country, the private Christian schoolers really need to stand up and take note, because this is very critical for them. Chester Finn, who's another education reformer, who's a contemporary of Bill Bennett's and one of his best friends, I think, they co-write a number of articles together. He's talked about how easy it was to get the Catholics back in the 60s and 70s, of course, through parochial aid. Well, what they've got now is what we're suspecting will happen is that a number of private schools will be enticed to switch over to charter schools. They will suddenly send a letter to all of their parents saying, okay, all of your tuition you don't have any tuition anymore. You don't have to pay that $3,500 a year tuition for the Catholic high school or the Christian high school down the road. It's free. You know, send your kid to our school. What they'll do is they'll turn themselves into a charter school. Of course, then they become a public school. Now, one of the key facets of public school education is you cannot teach a religion. That's one of the things. If you're in Bill Bennett's K-12 program, if you want to teach religion, you've got to order that separately. You've got to do that separately. That's not part of his official curriculum. Well, the same thing will go to the Christian schools. And, of course, if you're a parent and you've got 5 children and they're all in a private school somewhere, you're paying big bucks for their tuition. So if somebody comes to you and offers you this freebie on a plate, you'll jump for it. And that's what they're hoping will happen. And, of course, if they can get the Catholic schools to follow the lead, and that's how they're working. Unfortunately, that's not my bias. That's just how they're working right now. If they can get all the Catholic schools in the country to jump on this first, then there's going to be little tiny, you know, church in the valley Christian schools out there who are going to be left standing alone without any support. And that's when the state's going to start cracking down and say, okay, we want everybody in the public system now. All children will be in the system. No child shall be left
behind. No, but no child will be left behind with Christian values. Let's go to Bill calling from Pasco, Washington. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Good to have you with us.
I was going to ask a question. In Charlotte Iservite's video, OBE, or social engineering, it talks about how in the future there will be mandatory community service for everyone. Now, is this a law that is being proposed, or has it already been passed? When is this going to come into play? And that's pretty much the only question.
Okay, Sarah, did you get the question?
Yeah,
about this voluntary, they really call it a voluntary service, but it's really mandatory service. Because if it was mandatory, then, of course, that would carry a bad connotation. So this is voluntary public service, which you have to do.
Yeah, this is mandatory voluntary service.
Right.
Actually, it's all over the country. In a number of school districts, it's already in effect. I'm not sure how it goes state by state. But, yes, community service will be required and is an essential part of the child's education from henceforth. And one of the things is all of this is connected together through the faith-based initiative that Bush started working on in Texas during the 80s, the 90s, and of course began being legislated into federal law during the late 90s, and of course now in the 2000s, is that, and this is Peter Drucker's dream again, is that the churches would be held accountable for results. And, of course, we know that's the same agenda for children taking the assessment test, that they would be held accountable for results and that the schools would be held accountable for results. Well, Peter Drucker applies that same formula to the churches and says they should be held accountable for results and the charities shall be held accountable for results. So the students who go out and do community service will be held accountable for results. And that means that they will have measurable criteria. Let's say you have a food pantry in your church, and you sign up with the federal government, and you want to get a little bit of government aid. The government will then come in and tell you, here's how you're going to do it, and here's the criteria by which we will measure your results. You're going to serve XYZ number of people per day and dish out 857 cans of spaghetti sauce per day, or something like that. You have to jump through the hoops again. You have to dot every I and cross every T. So the community service agenda is basically one in which all of your private, charitable, voluntary work that you would do from your heart, let's say you want to go give a meal to a widow down the street, that's not going to count according to the state criteria. You have to do it through the state church agency. You have to do it through the state school agency where it's counted as credit on your transcript. You see what I'm getting at?
Sure. And of course, it was really very dangerous. Anything else you want to say, Bill?
Well, the other thing I was going to ask is, I see a lot of this Red Cross volunteerism going on. They're coming to public high schools through the Office of Emergency Preparedness and FEMA and the Citizen Corps, and I was just wondering how this is connected with the mandatory community service program. I'm seeing a lot of FEMA programs as well and things like that. I guess that was my other question.
No, I think we're going to have, we've got a couple of people call in who do have some comments on that. You just hang on there, Bill.
Okay,
and let's go to Jeanette calling in. Hi, Jeanette. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I just turned on your program, and I heard your guest, Dr. Stan, talking about how Catholics can be fooled into this program. I think she should know that in Watsonville, we have a new Catholic high school because Catholic parents sacrifice money to put their children in the high school because they do not want these programs that are being spread about. Also, there are fine Catholic parents who are homeschooling their children, so I hope you don't believe that all Catholics are going to be fooled.
Oh, no, but we were basically talking, I wish you'd heard the whole program, we were talking about Bill Bennett.
Yes, I know, I heard the beginning of it.
Right.
Yeah, it's actually Chester Finn. I was quoting Chester Finn, who's one of Bill Bennett's cronies. They co-write a number of articles together, which are actually published on the Fordham website on the internet, and Chester Finn was bragging about how easy it was to get the Catholics in the 60s and 70s through parochial aid, and he was saying if Catholic schools would go with this new agenda, which is, you know, to become a charter school, that they would lead the way for the rest of the country. And
well, that's a big if, because he needs to come to Watsonville and find out that he's very, very wrong.
Well,
maybe back in the 60s, some were fooled, but I think he's tooting his horn, because I know a lot of Catholics who pulled their kids out of public schools so fast.
Well, I hope
not only their learning, but their behavior, and they're sending them to Catholic schools or homeschooling.
Well, of course, the thing is that you just have to be so careful,
exactly.
First of all, what we teach in the whether they be parochial or Protestant schools, or, of course, the homeschooling program, because believe me, the wicked people have targeted those as well.
Boy, they sure have, I'll tell you.
Okay, God bless you. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Joan from Watsonville on volunteerism. Hi, Joan. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Sam. Great. I just tuned in, and I wanted to say that when I was at the Johannesburg Summit in last year, that this volunteerism is, of course, originating in the United Nations, and it's being pushed very strongly. And I was in a workshop, and I pointed out that you can't volunteer and have it mandatory. That's an oxymoron, and it destroys the whole concept of giving of one's free will.
But of course, everything that's going on today is really crazy. When you understand it's crazy, it all makes sense.
And then the other point is that in my insurance agency, I'm associated with a very large insurance company, and I get an email periodically, I think it's a couple times a year, asking me to fill out and document all of my volunteer hours. And, of course, I X that out of the system, but this is through the Global Compact of the United Nations, where we're bringing the businesses in line with the whole volunteerism agenda as well.
Okay, so basically then they're asking people who are participating in major corporations how much time they're putting in volunteering, right?
Exactly, because in order for the corporation to be, you know, qualified under this Global Compact program that's designed through the United Nations, they must get their employees to comply, and there's a whole list of criteria that they have to follow, and the volunteerism is one of them that they must document.
Well, now, what is this Global Compact, and why would the corporation even worry about it? Why doesn't the corporation just say, bug off, we're not interested in that?
Because there are all these ISOs and standards throughout the world, and in order for corporations to be certified, they must go along with this agenda. Otherwise, they're eventually shut out of global trading, and they will not be allowed to do business because they won't be certified or meet whatever criteria are necessary to do business.
What about the pressure on you to conform to filling out their voluntary, your voluntary mandatory public service?
Well, these things are implemented gradually, and this has been going on for about a year. And to this point, I've ignored them, but incrementally, as these things are enforced more and more, as we move from monitoring to policing, which is where this is all headed, to a total control police state, then they will crack down on us, and if we don't comply with that, then we won't have jobs either.
Any remarks there, Sarah?
Yeah, I think she's very right. I think she's very correct in what she's saying, and it's certainly consistent with the overall plan. What's important for people to realize is that nothing is going to count unless the state says it counts. So if you're at home taking care of little toddlers and infants, or if you're at home taking care of your elderly parents, you will still be required to do your mandatory community service. And, of course, if you study some of the models for these new style churches in the church growth movement, you'll find out that a number of them require that you do 5 hours a week of this kind of community service in their faith-based program. And it doesn't count that you might be doing other things on your own time with your own, you know, in your own heart. Those things don't count. You have to do the approved thing.
Okay, fine. Okay, thank you so much for calling, Joan. Anything else you want to say?
Well, she's exactly right, and this all feeds into the human value quotient, and if you do not produce in a quantifiable method a certain amount to society, then you are no longer necessary as a human being.
Now, of course, what Joan is referring to is she tripped to South Africa, I guess it was last year, to the Johannesburg Conference. This all ties in the United Nations and the United, was this tied in the United Nations Bank, or what was it?
Yes, the World Bank had a study on human value potentials.
And, of course, you must understand that the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund tie into this whole world elitist system. And, of course, who was it who supervised the establishment of this? A man named Alger Hiss, who was a communist spy, was presiding at Dumbarton Oaks when these things were established. He, along with a man named Harry Dexter White, was also a communist spy. Gee, what a coincidence. Well, thanks so much for calling, Joan.
Thank you. Good
bye-bye.
Night.
Okay, fine. And, of course, our guest this evening has been Sarah Leslie. We're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners tonight, Sarah?
I would just like to encourage people to go out to www.westandforhomeschooling.org and read what's there and sign on if you feel like it. And if you really feel like you need some documentation for some of what we've been talking about tonight, go out to homeschoolfreedom.org and read some of the material that's posted on that website, because you will certainly get an education about what the threats are that are coming down the pike.
Well, God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us, Sarah. I've really enjoyed having you on for a series of programs. If anything else comes up, you be sure to let me know.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Good night, and God bless you. Okay, fine. That was Sarah Leslie. I hope you enjoyed the program. We covered a lot of things this evening, and certainly our Jeanette and Bill and certainly Mike and Joan all contributed to the program. We appreciate their calls. Well, this is the time when I have to remind the listeners up in the Great Northwest that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're, as you know, we do 5 hours of talk radio a day. And then, of course, we do our weekend programs. It's heard on 35 stations. We have about 58 different outlets of one sort or another every week. You know, and of course, most of these we have to pay for, and quite frankly, we need your money to, or your help, so we can continue expanding, reaching people with the information you're never going to get from the controlled medium. And as people begin to hear the truth, they begin to see the truth, they begin to understand, this is really all about a group of men who would rule the world. And, of course, behind them is this desire for the New World Order, the New World Religion, and ultimately the New World Ruler, who is actually to become the Antichrist, the disciple of Lucifer. For there is within the an evil, a trinity of evil, as there is a Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, so there is Satan, Antichrist, and the false prophet. And when you begin to understand how this all fits together, it really begins to make a lot of sense. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, why, we'll be glad to send you one. Just call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders, our ministers. But please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, we won't be here tomorrow, Pastor Doug will, but we'll be with you on Thursday. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And we have to remind you the views that are expressed here, not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and of course the views of our callers. But right now, please hold your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Because we have with us on the line from Sacramento, from the Campaign for California Families, Randy Thomas. And hi, Randy. How you doing? Randy, are you there? Randy, are you there? Well, I wonder what happened to Randy Thomas. Randy, are you not there? Well, we'll have to see if we can get him back on again, because we seem to be having a little problem. So let's go ahead and please call Randy again and see if we can get him back on the line. We seem to have lost him there, Herman. So anyway, we're trying to get him on a different line. But Randy, of course, as really works in Sacramento, we work for the legislature there, and of course he is upholding Christian values. I've known Randy for, half a dozen years, maybe 6 or 8 years for that matter, when he worked for one of the Christian Resource Institute up in Sacramento, and then of course went off on his own with his own group. And he's out there, of course, really lobbying the legislature, keeping abreast of the legislation, keeping us informed of what's really going on. It's really very interesting. There's a tremendous drive now to get Governor Davis reelected, and they're going to do every dirty trick and anything they can to keep him in office, because it all has to do with power. And, of course, if they ever got him out of office, to get an honest man in there, they might start investigating the shenanigans and, of course, the way they, of course, wasted billions, and I'm talking about billions of dollars on the energy crisis, and, of course, bound us down, paying some of the highest electricity rates in the entire world right here, at least in the entire country, right here in the state of California. And, of course, it's amazing how they use the media. I saw them interviewing governor's wife on television, and she's really very attractive, and she's saying, look, why would you criticize, my husband? I mean, there are 47 states that are running a budget deficit, and the federal government's running a budget deficit. Why criticize my husband? Well, all of the states of the United States put together, are running a $100 billion deficit. And California is running $38 billion of the $100 billion. So I would think there'd be some justification for being critical, wouldn't you? In other words, if one state runs a $38 billion deficit and all the other states put together about $62 billion deficit, I might be concerned about the one state with a $38 billion deficit. They have just one-third of all the deficits, over one-third of all the deficits in all the states. And the reason is because, of course, the current governor increased spending 40% in the last 4 years. And, of course, that was pouring money out like it was going out of style. And he said, well, you don't blame me because the economy is turned down. And, you don't blame him because the economy is turning down. You blame him because, of course, that he has spent so much money and, of course, took a $12 billion surplus and turned it into a $38 billion deficit. And you may, if you're a Democrat, you may say, well, so is George Bush. And I certainly would be very critical of George Bush as well for what he's done. But I can't do anything about that. I can do something about what's going on in California. So we hope that we're going to get some news from either Randy, or perhaps we're getting Rod Dacus on the line here to bring us abreast of what's happening. And, of course, if we can't get Randy, why, we'll get Brad. And Brad is with the Pacific Justice Institute and, of course, informs us what's happening on the legal front. And Brad, of course, was with the Rutherford Institute when they had an office here in California. He's a very nice, young Christian man. In fact, he just got married just about the time that he decided to go off on his own. And we have an opportunity many times to meet them socially, a very charming wife. But he is on the front lines of defending Christians from persecution in Christian, schools that are being persecuted. He's doing really a great, great job in getting information. And, of course, then getting lawyers to take cases pro bono for individuals who are being persecuted because of their religious beliefs, or for certainly churches that aren't being allowed to build anything, not because there's anything wrong with the zoning restrictions, but because the anti-Christian bigotry in the Planning Commission or in the city councils are intent upon keeping Christian churches from developing or Christian schools from developing. Well, hopefully we get Brad, and if not, we'll just go to our special surprise guest for this evening, none other than our good friend John Loeffler. So, Herman, if you can't get either Brad or Randy, let's go ahead and get John Loeffler on the line. Well, let's see who we have now. Who do we have? Is this Brad?
Yes, this is Brad. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Well, tell us what's happening in the legal field now. Week you told us that, there had been some very exciting things happening and some very good decisions that certainly were showed that, by using the legal system, we can protect Christians and Christian organizations from persecution. What's going on this week?
What happened was up in Ventura, it was a mountain cross. We at the Pacific Justice Institute, Dr. Stanley, were called to put on a presentation. We tried to persuade them that they could actually defend their cross and keep it up because it was so historic. The original was put up in 1791 as a founding monument for the city itself of Ventura by Father Serra. And yet, despite our legal counsel and all, they decided to take the easy road. And they didn't tear it down, but instead they decided to sell it.
Sell
the property and the cross. So now, someone can buy it and tear it down, or someone can buy it and keep it up. And we're hoping the citizens of Ventura will get together and do the right thing to preserve it. If the event that there's some rumors that they'll be challenged by selling it, the Americans United for Separated Church and State from San Francisco are the ones who threatened the lawsuit in the first place. And if they decide to sue the city for allowing it to be sold, then we'll defend whoever buys it. And defend the constitutionality of their purchase.
Well, I tell you what, the Americans United for Separation of Church and State are anti-Christian bigots. That's what it's all about. They're not interested in defending the Constitution. They're interested in destroying it, because they know, as well as I do and you do, that the foundations of this country are rested upon belief in God and belief in Jesus Christ. And our founders, that was, of course, why, they stipulated that our freedoms come from God. And the God they were talking about was not Muhammad. It was not the Hindu God. It was Jesus Christ. That's why when they wrote the Constitution, it was, of course, dated in the day of our Lord. And, of course, why there were stipulations that there would be a certain length of time to sign a bill the president had. Sundays accepted. Why accept Sundays? Because that's a Christian holiday. Everybody knew it in those days. It's amazing how they've taken that out of our educational system today. And, of course, why this is never mentioned by Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, or Barbara Walters. Anything else, Brad?
No, that's about it for now. And people would like to keep up with our cases that we're involved with, the progress which we're working hard on. They can do that by contacting us at our toll-free number. Or if they'd like me to come speak at their church, I'm doing that. I'm speaking at Calvary Chapel this Sunday down in Southern California. They can contact us at 888-305-9129, 888-305-9129, or they can look us up at our webpage where they can sign up to get our case updates, which I think are real interesting.
That's 888-305, what is it, 9125?
9129.
Okay,
yeah,
that's Brad Dick.
And our webpage is pacificjustice.org.
Pacificjustice.org. God bless you. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Dr. Stone. Always a privilege.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Brad Dagus from the Pacific Justice Institute, and now we'll see if we can get John Loeffler on the line. And, of course, John's certainly one of my favorite people. As you know, if you listen to our local radio station, KFER, John has a program here every Wednesday evening called Steel on Steel. The idea, of course, that the steel sharpens steel, so men will sharpen men. And he really got this idea by doing talk radio in Colorado, where he had a very, very successful program for many years. Really too successful. He was having too much of an outreach and reaching too many people. And because of that, of course, new manager was brought in. And of course, he was forced to leave. But he had a profound impact on the Denver area in Colorado. There's still people there who remember him. And of course, then John worked for a time for Chuck Missler up in the Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and now, of course, he does his programs. We have them every day, and he produces other people's radio programs. And, of course, John is one of the most insightful people that I know, has a tremendous grasp of what's going on and a tremendous love for the Lord, recognizing full well that we're involved in a spiritual battle that is being fought on the political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. It's always a pleasure to have him here and, of course, to get his ideas of what's going on. In fact, we basically had a program that was done just this last week where we actually, John had invited Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and had invited Constance Cumby and Barrett Chose, and himself and myself, so that was Barrett, Candace, myself, and John. And we did a round table, and we, you know, what is going on in the world? Where are we headed? Well, I think we only need to sort of look and see what's happening in the Middle East to understand that we now have, everything has changed from what it was, say, 3 months ago. I mean, before that, of course, we had the United Nations and America certainly working as an extension of the United Nations. And then, of course, when we went to war with Iraq, why, we suddenly had the Anglo-American establishment on one side with, of course, maybe 20 or 30 nations we'd bribed to go along with us. I mean, the English, I think, were the only ones who sent any troops. The Australians may have sent a few. The Spanish sent one small submarine, and everybody else sent the best regards, but they had their hand out for large donations. Well, right now, we're going to see a new thesis, a new antithesis, and, of course, there'll be a new synthesis, but always moving towards the New World Order. But right now, we have Randy on the line. Hi, Randy. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm doing well.
Tell us what's going on up there in Sacramento.
Well, there's a lot that's happening. Obviously, the budget has been signed by Governor Gray Davis. It's still a bad budget. It just pushes the debt into the future. That's never good, and I bet you know that too, Dr. Stan.
Well, I know you can't borrow yourself into prosperity. And, of course, I think they're borrowing, I don't know, $10 billion or something like that, maybe a little more.
Yep.
And then, of course, they're putting off a lot more of the debt, so they'll start next year with a massive debt, which, of course, it's all illegal. And the idea of borrowing to pay your debts, and then, of course, because our credit rating is so low, we're going to be playing just among the highest interest rates. I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to, you know, an extra billion or two just to pay off this. And then they're borrowing money on the future settlement that they're going to get from the tobacco companies. They're going to get $5 billion. But, of course, they're borrowing the money, so now we're only going to get $2.5 billion. But anything, of course, to stop, prevent them from doing what's correct, and that is cutting back on services we can't afford.
Yes, and Gray Davis is in such trouble. Tom McClintock filed yesterday to become, or actually earlier today, to run for governor. He's the first Republican to actually file for governor to complete the filing fee. Tomorrow we'll see an announcement from Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's predicted he'll say he's not running. And then there's going to be an announcement from a woman named Arianna Huffington, who is a increasingly liberal person who is going to run as an independent if she does get into the race. So this is the big week. More than 238 candidates possible who have actually taken out papers. We'll see who actually files those papers. The deadline is 5 p.m. Friday. I expect to have around 20 people running for governor.
All right, fine. Well, it's going to be a fascinating, fascinating time. And actually, of course, Governor Davis is first of all trying to put off the time of the election. Then he wants to have his name, after he's been recalled, put on the ballots so that his supporters can vote for him again, and he may be able to get in that way.
Yeah, well, that's obviously it's illegal. He's trying to make up the law when the law says obviously different. in the state constitution. He's grasping at straws. You know, within all of this, Dr. Stan, you would expect that he would do something that ingratiates himself with more voters, that he wants more voters to support him. Over the weekend, he signed the cross-dresser bill, the transsexual bill. I bet you've heard about that, but a lot of people have not. This is the bill, AB 196, that would fine businesses, Boy Scouts, and property owners $150,000 for not hiring or renting to a drag queen, a transsexual, a cross-dresser, men who want to wear dresses. And the governor signed that, and he has pandered to a very small numerical minority, and he quietly did it, thinking he would get away with it. Dr. Stan, I want you to know that today we held a major news conference in Sacramento, and we were on TV, and we're blowing the whistle on the governor. It's coming out pretty strong in the media right now.
All right, fine. Well, I appreciate everything you do up there, Randy. Why don't you get out your website? People can get in touch with you and, of course, offer you the support that you need to keep the fire on the politicians.
Well, Dr. Stan, I will. And I want to ask you, do you have 1 minute to hear the TV report from tonight?
Sure.
I can play it right here. I've got it queued up.
You go right ahead.
This is about the news conference today, Campaign for California Families held a news conference on the West steps of the state capitol, and we were blasting Gray Davis for signing the transsexual bill, and this was on Channel 3 Sacramento, which is the largest newscast in the capital region. Let's listen and see if we can hear it.
Saturday. Today, several family groups held a rally at the Capitol to voice their objection to the bill. They say the bill will put new hardships on landlords and small business owners and punishes people who disagree with sex change operations. State officials say it will only clear up existing laws.
By forcing cross-dressing and transsexuality upon business owners, Boy Scouts, and landlords, Gray Davis is driving more businesses and jobs out of the state.
I don't believe it changes what the department or the fact that Californians are, you know, provided equal rights to housing and employment. And this is just simply, further clarification of existing statute.
Well, violators of the bill could be fined $150,000. Only three other states have laws protecting the rights of transgendered people. The new law will take effect on January 1st.
I hope you heard that, Dr. Stan.
Yeah, it came through very well. Of course, the thing is that if people want to be transgender, that's their business. But don't force other people to accept what they're doing. I mean,
it's very intolerant, isn't it?
You see, what about the rights of the people who disagree or for one reason or another feel that this would hurt their business or whatever it may be? Maybe they're just prejudiced. Do we have a right to be prejudiced in a free society any more than people have a right to be homosexual or sodomites in a free society? Of course they have a right to. But, of course, we have a right to disagree with them. Well, we used to have a right. Now we have no rights anymore. And, of course, as you heard today, the Episcopalian Church now is going to endorse by an overwhelming majority a openly gay bishop in the Episcopalian Church. I hope that will result in a tremendous exodus from that church and perhaps people looking to really find a personal relationship with our Lord. Anything else, Randy?
Dr. Stan, the fight against the cross-dressing bill, the transsexual bill, is just beginning now. There was the fight before it was signed. Now there's a fight after it was signed. I'd like you to stay tuned. Our organization is looking at how this can be defeated even after it's signed. More information at our website, savecalifornia.com, where you can sign up for free email updates. And that's savecalifornia.com. Dr. Stan, thank you for your information, the leadership you give out to the people.
God bless you. Thanks so much, Randy.
All right, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Well, that was, of course, it's just a sign of the insanity that's going on in our society today. And, of course, we can look at this, of course, from a logical point of view, from a libertarian point of view. We can look at it from God's point of view. How do you think God feels about what's going on today? How do you feel about how do you think he feels about the Episcopalian Church, supposedly representing God's ministry here on this earth, endorsing the acceptance of an openly gay homosexual bishop? How do you think he feels about, what is happening in our schools, about the abortion, about the Supreme Court's decision legalizing sodomy and all the other things that are involved with this way of life? And, of course, I'm very, very concerned that if God is just, his justice cannot sleep forever. How are you doing tonight, John Loeffler?
Doing well.
Okay, what are your thoughts on our conversation?
You mean about the cross-dressing thing?
About the cross-dressing, and about, of course, the average individual out here never really considers that there is a spiritual component to what's going on. And, of course, never really considers that God really does interfere in the affairs of men. And down throughout all history, when a country has turned against God, God has turned against that country.
Well, as I always say, people were running around after 9/11 saying, God bless America. I wanted to get a bumper sticker made up that said, God will bless America when America blesses God.
Amen.
So there's a direct correlation between the two of the three. The interesting part is whenever we talk about these rights issues, I just talked to an employer in Sacramento today, and he said, the problem with all these things is that it's nice to say that you've got these rights and everything, but the problem that you really run into is, say, one of these protected persons walks in, and they don't get the job because they're not qualified for it. Well, see, they have a little ace card up the sleeves. They can run over to the state commission and say, he didn't hire me because he's prejudiced against him. He's discriminating. And then all of a sudden, this hell breaks loose on the employer, and the burden of proof is on the employer to prove that, well, we had five other people who were better employed than he was, better employable than he was.
But you're really guilty until you're proven innocent.
Right, exactly. So it purports to support rights, but in reality, it doesn't. What we've done is created a few protected minority classes who then have forced the majority to give up their rights.
And, of course, what's this going to do to employers who say, we're not going to put up with this foolishness? In fact, I think we're increasingly seeing employers leaving here. That large sucking sound that Ross Perot used to talk about, is industries moving away from California.
Sure. I'm actually having fun watching California self-destruct. Not because it's good for business. Matter of fact, right here, about 3 miles from where we are, Bucky Knives is moving in from San Diego. They've moved their whole business here to Idaho.
That's Buck Knives?
Buck Knives, I'm
right,
sorry.
Okay.
And so they're moving in from San Diego along with, ironically, Idaho is being kept afloat to a large degree by California money, which is fleeing the state in two forms. One is retirement people who have had a lot of money and just want to leave the state because they don't want the high cost of living, et cetera, and all of the nonsense. The second are businesses who just can't survive in the climate that has become extremely hostile to doing business. I was writing an editorial today, and the biggest irony of what I call socialism, Dr. Stan, is the fact that that socialists will always tell you that capitalism is bad, the profit motive is evil, and all of these things. But what they never point out is the contradiction of socialism is the people who run the socialist organizations want the proceeds from the evil capitalism and the evil profits to run their own idealistic agendas. Now, they claim they're going to give it to the little guy, and they do at first. I mean, that's the first stage of it. But sooner or later, they always renege. And right now, we're at this point in our government, in California, California's just leading the pack on the whole thing, and that is all governments sooner or later renege on all of the promises that they make, the fiscal promises that they make to their citizens, and then scramble around trying to find someone else to blame for the problem and some way of avoiding the ultimate political fallout. And, of course, the average citizen is so confused by what he hears, he really doesn't understand the issue. I mean, look at California's energy crisis. California's energy crisis is a crisis of its own creation. Not of the evil power companies, but first of all of the environmentalist crowd, which kept making it so difficult to build new power plants that people just gave up. And second of all, from the concept what they called deregulation, which really wasn't deregulation, it was rigged regulation. Anybody who understands it knows that. So this was the situation California created. It's an artificial situation, you know. But unfortunately, the whole country is going that way. And as you said before, remember we talked about the whole issue of God. You know, my favorite expression is, without God, anything is possible. Because as soon as you take God out of the equation, then we're left to our own devices. And of course, that was the whole reasoning of the sources of the humanist movement, and that was the French Revolution. And when they got done, thousands of people were missing heads. So, and it's always run that way, every time we do it, because it always runs down the same channel. That's the funny part. They find things wrong with religion, and there are definitely, desperately things wrong inside of religion. But what that ironically points out is what Christians have been saying all along, and that is we're all fallen people. We have this propensity towards mess up and evil, and barring God's presence in our lives, we just don't correct it. Now, when God's there, there's a correcting mechanism that goes on. Without it, it always runs downhill towards the worship of humankind, the worship of false idols, meaning wealth and youth and things of that nature. And out of that worship and of self comes a chaotic situation, and out of the chaotic situation, somebody has to impose order, so the order is imposed from the top down. And that usually winds up in some kind of dictatorship or ruthless government. It tends to go in this almost every time it's tried. And we're going to do it again. The whole West seems determined to do that.
And in fact, the economy of the entire West is collapsing. Certainly the economy of Europe is contracting. The economy of Japan is already contracted. Even China is facing real problems because of the other loans, bank loans to overvalued property. And of course, if that property value contracts, then of course the banks are going to have countless billions of dollars, of course, to pay off. Because here in the United States, I think one of the biggest things right now, it's almost funny in some ways, and that is, of course, what's happening to Medicare. Because, you know, I knew when they first got started with this, it wasn't going to work in 1965. Sure. In fact, I even back about 1995, when I was still associated with the California, finally with the California Medical Association, they brought this this expert in from Washington, D.C., and he seemed like a nice enough guy, and he was presented as a government representative of, I think, the Republican Party. And I went to him afterwards, and I said, what's really going to happen? This system isn't going to work, and you know it, and I know it. He said, you don't want to know. And I said, yes, I do. And he said, well, I'll tell you what's going to happen. He said, we're going to have a two-tiered system. We're going to have a second-class system for the people who can't afford it, the Medicare recipients, and then we're going to have a return to a private system for the people who can't afford care. That's what this is really all about, and that's the way it's going to end up, and that's the way it's planned to end up. And, of course, now we're in the process. We're sort of in the death throes of Medicare. And it was started back in 65. They said this will never cost more than $9 billion. 1990, it'll cost $9 billion. You can trust us. Why, we have actuarial figures. Actuarial right. figures, you know. And, of course, you can trust us because we would never lie to you. Well, by 1990, Medicare was costing not $9 billion, but $90 billion. And it's been going up from there. I mean, it's, I don't know, it's a couple of $100 billion now, and no end in sight. And so they've got to figure out a way of cutting costs. And so what they're doing, they've created this drug crisis by working with the drug companies to jack up the prices and then blocking people from buying the same drugs that they could buy in Mexico or Canada for a third or a quarter of the price. They won't let you buy them here because, well, we want to guarantee quality. And that, of course, is just...
you heard that argument, too.
Yeah. And in fact, they've been trying to get me to put these people on my radio program.
Yes, me too.
And I just said, no way, Jose, you know. We'll talk about that when we get back. But now, of course, see, they've got the prices up so very, very high. And yet, of course, there was a report I just read this morning that as much as they talk about how the poor elderly can't afford it, federal studies have shown there's only 2% of the people in the United States, the senior citizens, who at least on one occasion were unable to afford the medicines that they had to buy during the course of last year. So this is really a non-issue, but they keep drumming it. And the whole idea is we're going to give you free medicines if you'll just go into the HMO. And then the doctor is going to ration your access to health care. But you're not going to blame us. You're going to blame him because, of course, we're going to put so much pressure on him. And the corporate executives of this HMO is going to come out making millions of dollars. They're going to put so much pressure on the doctors. They're going to get him to access, ration your health care. But, of course, you won't blame the politicians. And that's the great problem. We're going to be back here in just about 30 seconds with John Leffler. We'll welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Right. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and of course our special guest this evening, as was just before the break, was John Leffler. John, go ahead and pick up the story. You were commenting that they've tried to get you to carry their people on your program. They're saying, oh yeah, we don't want the people to buy the Pfizer pills that are made in Canada because we want the people here in America to have quality.
Yeah, I know. I saw this fax come across the, you know, we get a lot of faxes from different think tanks and everything, and I saw this one, and I thought, who are you trying to kid? You know, because this is almost a slap in the face to the Canadians, you know. Well, you Canadians are so stupid, you can't write control on your drugs. For the most part, the drugs are actually manufactured here in this country by the same company, you know, and shipped back across the border. The funny part is that the wealth bubble, by the way, Dr. Stan, is rising. It reminds me of a big blob of magma, because the biggest amount of wealth was produced after World War II, and the whole generation's associated with that, and as they retire, it moves up. Even if you remember, Dr. Shirley McCune at the Midwest Regional Laboratories was upset because she said, well, all the mass majority of the money is in the retiring people of 50 years plus, and we have to find a way to get that money. She actually said that in a speech I heard. Now, this is the socialist mentality. You know, it's their money, but we have to find a way to get it. You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
And maybe it's good to review the three rules of a bureaucracy, of a socialist bureaucracy, okay? People always talk in the public service like these issues are real issues. But the first rule of a socialist bureaucracy is to give lip service to its public function. It has to have a reason to exist. It's for the children. It's for the elderly. It's for the fill-in-the-blank here, okay? The second rule of a bureaucracy is to perpetuate its own existence at all costs, even at the expense of its public function, okay? And so, although it starts out by, it's usually a Ponzi scheme, and it starts out by purporting to do some good for people, but in a short amount of time, it can't do it. It becomes big and bloated. So at this point, what it does is it circles the wagons, and keeps itself going. The same is true for a lot of charitable organizations, Dr. Stan. You know, the organization to get rid of XYZ disease. I'm sorry, most of these organizations probably don't want to see XYZ disease go away because they'd have to reinvent themselves then. So the longer these, that's why the DARE program will never succeed. It's why the war on drugs will never succeed. Because while there are some idealists involved with these organizations that really do want to see them succeed, The more bureaucratic powers at the top don't, because at that point they lose all purpose for their function. And finally, the third stage of a bureaucratic socialist is to defend themselves from accountability, because sooner or later, the jig is up, and somebody's going to be called on the carpet. And so what they have to do is prevent the backwash of the rather bad situation they have caused from coming back to them. And doing it. And maybe the golden rule of all socialist bureaucrats is, even in an emergency, a bureaucrat will always think like a bureaucrat. For example, Dr. Stan, up here in the Northwest a couple of years ago, we had all these forest fires, and we have these helicopters that run in, dip water out of lakes in these giant 100-gallon buckets or whatever they are, run over to the fire, dump it with the trapdoor, come back. Well, they couldn't get water out of one lake because nobody could figure out whether some endangered fish was in there, and they just might scoop up one of the endangered fish. And so five firefighters died because of their inability to clear all the bureaucratic hurdles. And that's the golden rule of bureaucracy. A bureaucrat only thinks in terms of the organization and his career, and even when human life is involved, they will still be thinking like bureaucrats. So that's sort of socialism in a nutshell. Those are the three rules. I've always challenged anybody to prove me wrong.
Well, I think that people really don't understand that there are two basic philosophies. One, the individual is important. The individual should be free of regulation. The only government you need is that sufficient to maintain law and order. And over and beyond that, it should be up to the individual. And people, oh, but what about the poor, you know? What about the poor, you know? And, you know, I never, growing up, saw people, you know, on the streets, you know, with laundry carts or with you know, grocery carts pushing them around. We didn't see poor people. We had places for poor people or with mental diseases where they could go and be taken care of. We were a compassionate society. Nobody ever starved to death in the United States. Nobody ever went without medical care in the United States because by law, every single county had to provide medical care either in their own county or an adjacent one. But, of course, the socialists wanted, of course, to justify the control because this is really all about control. They're not really interested in helping people or helping children or feeding the people. They want to be able to talk about that to justify controlling them. And, of course, you know, how many times have you heard people say, well, if government didn't provide for the health care, how would people get health care? Well, we used to provide it at the local level. We used to have local county hospitals, and we didn't have all these fancy nursing homes in them, but those people got wonderful, wonderful care at the old county hospitals. And there were idealists there who worked, and there was this camaraderie and feeling of compassion and concern for our fellow man. But now, of course, that's gone. At one time, children took care of their parents. The government said, oh, no, we're from the government. We're here to help. We want to take care of your parents for you. We want to relieve you of that responsibility so you can be free. And then they begin saying, well, now there's only a certain amount of money out there. You know, and certainly we have to think about quality of life. And after all, there comes a time when maybe we ought to just let people just drift away. Maybe we give them a little shock to help them along. You know, because after all, look at all the money we're putting out in end-of-life care. And wouldn't the compassionate thing be to just maybe let some of them die? Well, we've got Mike on the line from, I bet that's Mike from Santa Cruz. Mike, are you there?
It's Mike again.
Mike, okay, question or comment?
Question, actually two questions. I want to ask about Bishop Robinson, if I may. In today's news item, questions were raised, well, there were allegations against him involving inappropriate touch towards young men earlier in his career and current involvement in pedophile websites. And so it seemed the election within the Episcopal Church was going to be delayed. But then it seems they went ahead with it. So I wondered if John knew anything about what happened with that. And also, what John might know about the Masonic connection to the Episcopalian Church.
All right, John, do you have a comment on either of those things?
Don't have anything on the second one. The first one didn't surprise me because in nasty little affairs like this, I sort of surmised the allegations were probably false to start with, that were rumors that got charged off.
It was a last-minute thing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And usually when it sort of pops up like that and then runs around. That's why I wasn't surprised when it just sort of dissolved as fast as it came.